I noticed that every week some guy that want to do to be in the industry want to talk with me, you know, to know what patients what we need as patients, how many patients you think you are, how many patients will buy my medicine or whatever. And I hate that because they are all men. Yeah. There's no woman. And it was like, you women are good to take care, but not to lead, you know? So thank you. And now you move, and now the guys are coming here, and we will make it happen. And the attitude was really bad. And you know nothing because you're a woman. So that was one of the things that make me think that I want to have a brand too.
That was patient activist Francesca Brivio describing her struggle to be taken seriously as a woman in the cannabis industry in Peru. Francesca, well known in her native country as an actress and TV presenter, started using cannabis therapeutically to manage the debilitating symptoms of a rare autoimmune disease. Determined to use the privilege that comes with fame, she has successfully campaigned for better legal access to medicinal cannabis in Peru. This is a great episode to mark International Women's Day, as Francesca's story shows that change can come about without sacrificing the softer qualities of collaboration, compassion, and humility, and that success in the cannabis space isn't necessarily predicated on ego-driven, divide-and-conquer competition. You're listening to Cannabis Voices. People's stories in their own words about the healing power of the cannabis plant.
Hi, Francesca, how are you today?
Hi, Mary, thank you for inviting me. I'm really, really glad that we can make it.
Yeah, me too. It's been a struggle connecting because you're quite far away. You're in Peru. That's kind of, you know, in another hemisphere. Are you in the southern hemisphere technically?
Yes.
Or
yeah. Yes, okay. Yes, South America. Yeah.
So can you tell me a little bit about your life before your cannabis journey?
Yeah, thank you, Mary. Well, first I have three kids. Sorry if my English is not that perfect. I will do my best. But if I don't remember something, I know you can help me. I am mother. I have three kids. Well, one is a grown adult. Now he's 22. The other one is almost 18 and 14. And I have a grandson now.
No. Well, yeah. I'm sorry there's no video on this podcast, but it's very, very hard to believe that Francesca could have a grandson, but there you go.
Yes. And I used to be an actress. I used to host TV shows and TV actress. And I was a journalist in a time too. And I was like really in other life. Yeah, for me it's another life, because before I get sick, I have this rare disease. Before I get sick, I was on TV, I was married, and I have these three kids, and I really like obsessed with some stuff that maybe I don't think now that are that important. And so I really appreciate, I really thankful some way that of my disease, that I get this disease, because I think like that helped me to put in perspective a lot of things. I used to have many depressions, and I have a lot of anxious and pressure, you know, to be on TV and everything that is around that. And yes, it's a life change. My life changed a lot, but as I told you, it was really nice. I prefer my life. I like more of my life now than before.
Well, that's interesting. Interesting, because for many people, you know, working in TV and everything that entails, that's living the dream, right? So it's interesting that since becoming ill, actually, you know, your life has possibly more meaning, I guess, is what, yes. what you're saying. So, so can you tell us a little bit about your illness? When did you first notice that something wasn't quite right?
It was in 2009. I remember exactly because it was in August in 2009, and I have these like hives in my arm, and it was itchy. And in that time, I was really obsessed with food and what I used to eat, you know, really obsessed. So when I started with these hives and itchy things, I called my doctor and he told me, probably something that you ate. So take prednisone and blah, 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 some pill for allergy and it will fade away.
So basically steroids, is yes. one of the things you were, okay.
Mm-hmm. Yes, but I was sure that doesn't make sense because I, as I told you, I know exactly what I was eating. So food, I don't think that that was happening, but it was like 1 week and these hives and itchy thing was really worse. And then I have pain inside me, like my bones was with pain inside. Yeah, it was weird. And I start like feeling more weak. And I always have chronic fatigue, but it was worst. It was getting worse. So I was changing doctors because I went first to one, then to other. And it was like 1 month that everything was getting worse, and headaches and nauseous and feel like I have a flu, but I didn't have a flu and that kind of stuff. And one day I remember in that time I was married and we were in the bedroom and I was really tired and really feeling really bad, really bad. And I told my husband, like, come on, I can't handle any of this thing because we didn't know, we didn't knew what was happening. So he turned on the light and all my face was like, I was beat up, like swelling, and my mouth, my eyes, and everything was hurting so much. So he took me to the hospital, to the emergency, and I was having an anaphylactic
shock.
Yes. Yeah. And I was sleeping, you know, I wasn't doing anything. So that's the beginning of this journey. I was 1 week in the hospital and they make me all the exams you can imagine, MRIs, blood tests, biopsies, and nothing shows. Nothing for sure, you know, like some crazy things were going on, but they didn't know what is happening. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. And like that was like 6 months, not okay. knowing.
And how did that feel, not knowing?
It's the worst part for me. I was just like begging, you know, like I was, yeah, begging, like, I don't care if it's cancer, AIDS, I don't know, you know, lupus, whatever. I can beat it. I was sure that I will beat it, but I just want to know to see the face of the disease, you know, the face of this thing. So I can't like make a plan and go for it. So it was really, not knowing was the worst. For me, it was the worst. When I went to the doctor, I was always like, please tell me I have like, you know, whatever disease. And when he's like, no, you don't have cancer for anything. I was like, fuck, sorry. I was like, no, I want to, you know, because it was, yeah. It was horrible not knowing. For me, it was the worst. Yes.
So you weren't getting any answers from your doctors in Peru. So what did you do next?
Yes. It started in August. In November, the doctor told me, you have to leave Peru and you have to go to other country because we don't have the reactive, the chemistries or the chemics to know okay. what is happening to you.
Right.
So
they didn't have the testing.
Yes.
Sort of, yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm.
So I was like, okay, now what can I do? Because my insurance was in Peru, isn't for I don't have the money. I didn't have the money. I still don't to go to doctors in other countries, you know. So I say, no, he's talking something nonsense. I will find what I have. So I went to every doctor, I think, in this country, like the more experience or whatever. So, and I was in a wheelchair because I can't walk. And it was, I was really weak and with all this pain. And I was huge because I take so many corticoids.
The sounds of Peru.
Yeah.
the sounds of Peru in the background. I love that. No, I love that. I can hear Peru happening. Lima on this podcast. Excellent. So your body has swollen up because of the steroids.
Yes, and they give me injections and chemotherapy. And it was really tough moments for me and my family. One day, the doctor told me that they will try something new with me. It was injections that cost like more than $1,000 each. And I have to have like 3 per week. So it's a lot of money and the insurance won't pay it. So my friends, they told me, well, we're going to have that money. We will make that money. So they make like rifas, how you say.
Rifas. Rifas is when you do raffles, when you have like a prize and prizes and numbers.
Yes. They made that. And it was searching for Dr. House, because in that time I was obsessed with Dr. House. Because I was hoping that maybe one of the patients on TV have my disease, you know? So I was like watching all this episode. So they make this searching for Dr. House to get money for paying my injections. So it was really touching, moving. But I was like, don't say that it's for me, because I used to be on TV. So when I get sick, they fire me. So, they only said like, for Francesca, she have this rare disease. We don't know. She needs this treatment and blah, blah, blah. And some guy, a journalist on TV, he talked about me, that I was really bad situation, that I have this disease, and everything that I didn't want happened. And in the newspapers, in the covers, you know, of magazines or whatever, that I was really sick, that I'm going to die and whatever, you know, I was just fighting. And at the beginning, I was really shocked and mad, because I didn't want anyone to see me like that. You know, my pride, I was like, no, I'm stronger than that. I don't like pity, you know, like, oh, poor Francesca or whatever. But now I have to thank you, because that helped me a lot, because the doctors, they told me that they wouldn't give me that treatment that they were thinking. And then I have to go to Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota. Mm-hmm. So we need more money. But we get it. We get a lot. They make concerts of music, a lot of bands here, the industry of, you know, alcohol, beers or whatever, they give for free. So in the concerts, the people pay for it, and we have the money. Artists, you know, painters, sculptures, whatever. It was really
amazing.
Amazing. Wow. You know that a country.
You must have felt so loved.
Yes. It was, for me, it was crazy, because of course I have insecure issues. Like, I think most of the people, and if you're a woman, if you're a woman on TV, most more. So it was really touching and make me. And as I told you, I have really hard depressions. I used to have really depression, hard depression. I was in a hospital for depressions, you know, before.
Okay.
So it was like, no, I want to leave. And I want to leave, you know, and I am, I'm really grateful for all that people. And the insurance company that only was for Peru, they approve for to pay a big person of the bill that the Mayo Clinic just for once. Then I have to go in a second. In Mayo Clinic, they told me that I have this rare disease, but they don't really. I was like 1 month there. At the beginning, I thought, when I will go and they will look at me and they will know, you know. But now it was like I make all the blood tests again, all the MRIs, all the biopsy in bone marrow. You know, it was all starting everything again. It was tough, but I was like happy because I was sure that I will have more answers.
And what did they find?
I have this rare, well, in that time, in 2010, in February, the criteria for the disease wasn't all established. So some of them, they told me it was mastocytosis systemic. And others told that it's MCAS, that is a mast cell activation disorder. It's in all your body. It's autoimmune. And sometimes my brain swell or my stomach or my joints, my uterus was removed. I got pneumonia and I broke the two ribs just for coughing, you know?
Wow. Okay. Yeah.
And I was in a wheelchair and a lot of pain, blur, visions, nausea, whatever you name it, I have it, you know. And they think sometimes that is multiple sclerosis. Sometimes they think it was lupus. They always think it's lupus. I have my t-shirt that say it's not lupus because yes, but it was like that, and still have the disease because it doesn't have any cure.
Yeah. I guess then if it's autoimmune, so what treatments did they prescribe?
I don't know. In one moment, it was 32 pills per day. So, and if that doesn't work, wait 1 month. And if that doesn't work, change it to another combo. And they give me a lot of combos. And it was getting results and I get worse. So I have to go back to Mayo Clinic in July 2010 because I was getting worse. So, but they told me that they can't treat me if I'm in Peru because they can't be responsible of sending me emails, you know, with, because if something happens to me, they will be in problems. So, I was in Peru without doctors and without treatment, feeling alone, really, really sad. It was bad for me. The doctors, for me, they dehumanize sometimes the patient. I have really bad experience like a patient. I think they don't like to listen. They... Sometimes, not all of them, of course, there are amazing doctors that I really, really appreciate and I'm really thankful, but I really think that doctors need to go back to how the things were before when you listen to the patient and you think a patient as a whole, not only a symptom or not only a disease, because I knew, and I'm not a doctor, that something was going on with me and something that is in my whole system. Not only, you know, because I have endometriosis and I have Helicobacter pylori, like 3 times, 4 times, I don't know. I have this pneumonia. I have Raynaud's disease syndrome.
Raynaud's, yeah.
And I have a lot of stuff. And I knew that was one disease that was making all this mess. Mm-hmm. But they don't want to listen. They treat me like it was crazy that they know more about me than me. And that's, for me, it's crazy.
Is there any, I mean, it's something I wrote an article about endometriosis, and it really, I suppose, brought to my attention something that I hadn't thought about before, in that doctors don't necessarily take women's pain seriously because of this outdated vision of women suffering from hysteria and mm-hmm. possibly, you know, their illnesses being inventions of the mind just because they have a womb, basically. Yes. Is that something you can relate to?
Yes, of course. Yes. They are, I think in general, they act like that. But if you are a woman, it's worse. Because they think that you are so stressed, you know? You have to relax. You're stressed. And it's like, come on, you're stressed too. And what? I know my levels of stress, you know? I live with me all my life. So if I'm saying that I'm feeling different, that I have this pain or whatever, listen to me, please. I need you to believe me and do something about my pain, you know? But yes, they treat many of them like we are crazy or we are exaggerating. We are
exaggerating.
Yeah. Yes, our symptoms. And it was good that I was all with this hype in my face and all my body, because they were like, now you believe me, you know, because in the same way I look outside, it was inside, you know, my organs were sometimes grow mm-hmm. bigger, and the swallow is inside too.
Yeah. I mean, looking at you now, there is no, you know, there isn't the kind of physical hives on mm-hmm. your skin, which hopefully suggests that your inner
healthy.
Organs are also in a better shape. And that has a lot to do with your discovery of the therapeutic benefits of cannabis, right? So can you tell me a little bit about that part of your journey? How did that mm-hmm. start?
Yes, I'm really, really grateful because cannabis is in my life. In 2014, I was really, in 2013, I was in a trip in another country, and someone told me if I want to smoke weed, some mm-hmm. hits, you'd say hits, a couple of hits?
Yeah, a couple of tokes, maybe.
Okay. So I've never been... I never smoke weed like every week or every day or every week or every month. I don't have any problem of it, but it wasn't my use, you know. It was like, and then she told me, "You want to smoke?" I said, "Yes, of course. I want to relax." And I was feeling really bad that day. I have headache and nauseous and really tired. So I was laid in this sofa and have this joint. And immediately, like 30 seconds before, I feel relief. And that pain that I was feeling, and yes, it was really nice how I feel. And not only like, oh, I'm stoned. It isn't like that. It was like relief of my pain, of my nauseous, of everything I was feeling. So I remember, your dog. I remember that I read, because when you have a rare disease, you read a lot of disease or studies or whatever. So I remember that I read something about cannabis and in cancer, in patients with cancer for the chemotherapy. So makes sense, the nauseas, the headaches or whatever. So I told myself that I would do more research about it. So in 2014, in June, like 8 months before that day, I decided to quit every single pill I was taking and use cannabis. In that moment, I only knew cannabis, the weed that you smoke. in a pipe, because so I take two hits, how it talks, what to say?
Two drags, maybe. Maybe that's two drags.
Two drags.
Dos caladas, no?
Dos caladas, yeah. The drags in the morning and two in the night. I was trying to dose.
Oh, two puffs.
Two puffs. Yes.
Yeah.
That makes sounds better. So I mean, two puffs in the morning, two puffs in the night, but it was inconsistent in the way that sometimes the weed I buy have like make me have more energy. Sometimes I have less energy. Sometimes give me more headache. Sometimes I feel relief. So, but it was much better than taking pills. And my, I quit my depression pills, anxious pills, and everything. So I think the first thing I noticed was the way with my disease,
you can say that the relationship you have with your disease.
Yes, yeah. It changed the way I have. I was more like cool, you know, more like seeing the bright side of the things. It comes with changing the way I eat, the way that I used to eat, because when I get sick, I start eating junk food because I was like so sad and mad and everything, and yeah, nervous. I don't know that I was eating a lot of junk food, and I was in a wheelchair and everything. So I was not taking good care of myself, and not obsessive like I was when I was on TV, in a healthy way, you know, to be healthy. So I started eating correctly, healthy. And I started moving, because in that time I was walking. So I started like doing more exercise. And then I take ayahuasca. And
big fan.
Yeah. And peyote.
Oh, I've never had peyote, but.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I make some ceremonies, with all the respect here, you can imagine, in Peru. So. Yeah. In one ceremony of peyote, I decide that I will quit everything and I start healing some stuff, mine, that inside of me, I can deal with this disease. And and it was a life-changing for me. So I quit all the pills. I start eating healthy, in a healthy way, moving, having 10 minutes of exercise, 20 minutes, whatever. But, you know, every day, like walking, and have a healthy life in all sense. Not a toxic positivism, you know. I hate that. Like, no, you're okay. You don't have nothing. Come on. No, I don't like that. I don't like that. But, yeah, I'm with this disease. Sometimes it's really bad. Sometimes I don't want to go out of the bed. But doesn't determine my life. You know, it's much, much more than that. And it's an episode. It's part of it. It's not all of it. And it's okay. Sometimes I stay lying in my bed, you know, watching movies, listening to music or reading. It's okay. It doesn't matter. It's like chill. And that was, for me, the first thing. But in 2016, 1 year and a half, before I started smoking weed to treat my disease, I was a little bit tired because I don't like to have that sensation every day. You say stone, you know? It was not a stone, but a little bit. So I was tired to feeling it every day. So I quit in 2016 and do it like sometimes, not every day. And 2017, my disease came back. Like really, really bad, really bad. And I can't eat. And I start like losing weight. And I was like school, you know, really bad. And start all over again, all the exams. And I was like, well, it was really difficult. I start taking again psychiatric pills like antidepressant and anxiolytics. pill for anxiety.
Anxiety, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then I said, no, come on, I will use cannabis again. So I, but no, now in that moment, I knew more stuff. I know more stuff than now. No, than before.
Then, yes.
So I start using the oils. I vape the herbs. Mm-hmm. And I have my mighty and their THC, because for me CBD is nothing, so I have to use THC, really concentrate in THC in the vape, in the oil, and in the skin sometimes. So that's my only medicine.
And back then, because I know it's slightly changed now, I think, what was the legal situation in Peru?
We didn't have nothing in that moment. It was illegal. And so in 2017, I told that I will fight for this regulation, for this legislation, because I started in 2015, 2016, like sometimes saying like, ah, yeah, I'm using cannabis, but it was like no one paid too much attention. Mm-hmm. And I didn't say it with that conviction, you know, with I'm using cannabis and I'm going to be an activist.
And you didn't own it. It was
yes. But in 2017, I own it. I say, no, okay, come on. I will help this, because I was listening to the moms that they were fighting to. And they weren't, people wasn't paying attention, enough attention for me, you know. So it wasn't fair. And I know my privilege. And I thought if for some purpose should be to help other people, you know. It's not, if you have privilege and you don't use it, it's like, for me, it's like, I don't know, really bad. So I start saying and talking about it and start like going on TV shows with a journalist and in the covers of magazines and talking, oh, Francesca, she's look, because I was in a really bad shape. And now I was like really much better. So they were like, oh, come on, look, Francesca, and she's using cannabis. Let's talk about it. And we start like, you know, saying this out loud. And it was good, because in 2017, we have a law, because they broke in a house of mothers that they were doing home growth. Mm-hmm. It was a scandal, because they are in narco traffic, you know, they were mothers that were trying to help their kids. So we finally have a law in November 2017, but it's only for medical purpose, and it's only for labs. Laboratories only can make and work with cannabis. So it's good that we have a law that is we need the three ways to access. We need the labs, because I'm the group of patients that think that that is good, because I have the right to go to a pharmacy, at a drugstore, and buy my medicine and to know exactly what is on it. So I think that's good. But what I'm think is incomplete. I have the right to have it in my home too, and make my own medicine. If I want to vape the flowers, if I use the seeds or the roots or whatever, no one can tell me that I can't do it, because it's my right. It's the right to try that I'm defending. So there is that. And the other is the collective growth, that some clubs for patients, like mothers or whatever, that you want to have your home growth too, you can. So our law only allowed laboratories do it.
And is it right? I remember speaking to your your esteemed colleague, Max, who you work with at Gotas Esperanza, which we'll talk about in a bit. But I think he told me that it's what's been approved is CBD, right? Is that that's what's legal to use? Or is there, or can patients also access through this, through the labs, this cannabis THC? With THC as well?
Yes, I work in the we have the law in November 2017. In May of 2018, the government show us what they think will be their reglementation. Reglementation is the correct word? La reglamentación.
The rules. Yeah.
No? Something like that. Every law have the way that have to be. That law works.
Regulations.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So they sent us like a regulation they thought that would be. And it was really bad because it was only CBD. It was only the prescription only for valid for only 3 days. If you have psychiatric problems, you can't use it. If you were in jail or you have problems with police, you can't use it. And it was really a stupid thing. So I was like in TV again and Megan saying like, no, we need THC. For example, as I told you, I use THC. So I was like, no, you won't, because the law, you can't go further than the law, but you can, but the same, you can't go less, you know? Mm-hmm. So the law said that allowed cannabis, not CBD, you know. So THC is in cannabis. So that was our fight, that they can't do that. And we won. So we, yes. So we have THC, CBD, CBG, whatever the doctor want. But in paper, it's perfect. I think our regulation in paper is really good because the insurance can will pay for it, and the prescription
results.
Is 30 days and not only three like they want it. And of course you can have psychiatric or you can be in jail or whatever and you can use cannabis. And it's not only like in other countries like only for three disease only. No, the doctor can prescribe for whatever he thinks, she thinks it's
and it
correct.
And it can be your family doctor that prescribes. It doesn't have to be a specialist or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
and what has been the response from doctors? Have they been open to prescribing cannabis to patients?
Not that much. But I think it's changing. And I understand. I understand if you, your whole life, you know, like people told you that this is bad, that it's too dangerous to work with cannabis or use cannabis. I can understand and I can empathize with that. But if you're a doctor and the health of the people is in your hands, it's your duty to learn more, you know, to be connected with what is happening, and you can go away and say like, no, doesn't work and whatever. You can say, really, I don't want to educate myself. Okay, it's your choice, you're free. But you can't, what I don't stand, I hate when they say things like that doesn't work or it's not secure to use it. And that, and this have many doctors that still have that position. Like, no, marijuana, cannabis is not a medicine. You can't use it in medicine. It's really dangerous. Please try first this, and then okay, if nothing works, we'll see. One of my fights is that cannabis is in the first role. I don't know.
Yeah, first line of
treatment. Yes, because if doesn't work, you can change to other things that are really tough. For example, when they give me all this cortisone, prednisone, and whatever, I have my hip, the bone of my hip was dead. necrosis.
Ah, okay. The tissue was dying. Okay.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. With cannabis, I make it alive again. But Woo-hoo. My tissue, yes, was dying. So wow. I'm not saying cannabis is the panacea and everyone have to use it, but I'm saying that could be, should be for some people. And you have the right, I was saying, you have the right to try. And if you want, you can. That's my fight, you know, that everyone can try if they want. If you don't want, don't use it. I don't care. I'm not saying that, yes, you have to use it. But you have to know that it is the choice. And if you want to use it, it's there for you.
I think what's interesting, and I think your case highlights it perfectly. So you had, you know, you had a very difficult to diagnose rare condition that had all these seemingly unrelated symptoms that were debilitating. And what doctors tried to do, I imagine, was give you drugs that dealt with the individual symptoms. And then I'm sure they would have given, you know, those, you'd have got side effects from those different drugs that they probably gave you drugs for, et cetera. And when you were talking at the beginning that there was this lack of a holistic view, the beauty of cannabis is that it does work holistically. I mean, your case is a perfect example of that. You know, you had a systemic condition and cannabis works systemically. So, you know, it's reduced your inflammation. It, you know, it's helped with your anxiety. It's helped with your pain. Probably, I mean, it's something that's difficult to measure, but probably or maybe behind your condition, there was some imbalance or some deficiency, possibly with your endocannabinoid system, maybe. Do you think that's, is that something that you relate to, that there was something going on with your endocannabinoid system?
Yes, of course. I always thinking about that. I think that I have, if maybe someday we'll know like the disease of endocannabinoid system, you know, when you have a not balance your mm-hmm. cannabinoid system. Yeah. Maybe I think that maybe I don't have mastocytosis. Maybe I have this disorder
yeah, an
in my
endocannabinoid deficiency or some imbalance.
Yes, yeah. Because for me it was life changing completely. I'm not saying that I don't feel bad. For example, now I feel a little bit nauseous, but I know that I will have my vape, you know, with my herb there, and I to puff and I will be perfect and I will work and I will laugh, you know, not like if I want to laugh a lot or it's in the night when I finish all my work or something. Some people like to take a wine, you know, to drink wine or whatever. For me, sometimes it's okay. I will use a little bit more of my dose, my regular dose, you know, in the night. So I chew. But yes, it's really amazing. And I want that for everyone. I if someone wants to try it, that they can have the notion, that an option.
The option. Yeah, yes. Absolutely. Yeah. So tell us a little bit about Gotas de Esperanza. What is that? And how did it come about?
Cannabis Gotas Esperanza started in 2017 when I decided to start this fight like serious. And 2018, in February 2018, this month, I make it legal and everything because I want serious work here. I want to educate. I want to work with the government to help make... I know as a private, I can do a lot of things, but I will never replace state politics, Politica mm-hmm. Estado. Mm-hmm.
So is it a charity? What is, so it stands, so Gotas de Esperanza is drops of hope in English.
Yes.
So you can kind of imagine the meaning behind that. So does it have charitable status in Peru? Or?
Yes, it's a non-profit. And I always say that it's like for hope, basically, for give hope. I'm thinking changing the name because the name is Cannabis Gotas de Esperanza. And I'm thinking changing the name from Cannabis de Esperanza, only cannabis of hope. Because mm-hmm. I don't like that people only think that the medicine is the drops because the medicine is the plant. And if you, for example, in my case, if I only can use one cannabis, one way to use it, it would be the vape.
Okay. Yeah.
For me is the best. So, yeah. For other people are the drops or whatever. But in my case, I was trying to help people for every day they write to me. Every day they ask me where they can go to find a medicine. If I know some doctor that can treat them. So that was the beginning of Cannabis Gotas Esperanza, because I was like, okay, I don't want, when I want to use cannabis at the beginning, I didn't know where to go. You know, I didn't knew where to go. Who can I ask? Which, in internet, we have a lot of information, but you don't know which one is correct. So in 2016, 14, 15, you can imagine it was worse. So I didn't want to anyone feel the way I felt, you know, like really lonely. And so that's how it started for me, Cannabis Gotas Esperanza. So I can give hope to the people and tell, okay, you can use this medicine, read about it. And I was sharing like Manuel Guzman work, you know, Cristina. In 2017, I met Paola Pineda. She's a doctor from Colombia. She's a really great doctor and a warrior. And I met her in 2017, and she inspired me that I start talking about disobeying the law, because not because a law exists, it means that it's fair. So I, you know, be more sure to talk and say like, no, I will use it, you like it or not, because it's my right. And I was, at the beginning, I was really afraid, because I talk about that I have my own plant in my home and that I don't care if I go to jail, but it's my right and blah, blah, blah. So at the beginning, I was like really scared. Still, I am sometimes, but well, it is what it is.
I'm trying to imagine what it would be like in the UK if someone who had been, you know, a well-known face in television came out in public to say, you know, to do exactly as you've done. You know, I use cannabis medicinally, I grow plants at home, and then, you know, is the activist that you are. I think that would make a huge difference in the UK, normalizing, because unfortunately we live in an age of celebrity. And they're like, oh yeah, if they're doing it, then that, it must be okay. So you know, it's ridiculous, but thank God you have had the courage to do that, because, you know, I'm sure for a lot of, Peruvians, it's normalized it and removed some of the stigma, I imagine.
A lot of stigma here. Yeah. Really conservative.
I'm wondering, which is, I suppose from a Western perspective, we think of, you know, because of ayahuasca and the abundance in the Amazon rainforest of plant medicine, etc., we sort of imagine that all Peruvians are embracing, you know, plant medicine, but I imagine probably they're not.
No.
Has there been any backlash or anything about you being an activist because you're a woman activist? I know it's something that, having spoken to Carola Perez and other female cannabis activists, that there's been some misogyny and nasty comments made about them because they're women doing this.
Of course. A lot. I live, as I told you, in Peru, in South America. Like, macho culture is really strong. Machistas, you know, the... I don't think there's a word in English for macho, you know. It's really bad, very conservative, and really like, women, we are not equals. We are not seen as equals in many sense. So it was tough. It was tough because I'm a woman and I have a voice and I use it. And some people don't like that. So, for example, when the Museum of Hemp and Hash Marijuana in Barcelona. They invited me to be part of exhibition. They were doing Mary Jane, Woman in Cannabis. And my picture was there with a letter that I wrote to the president that time of Peru. And some guys were writing in Facebook that, of course, I have sex with someone to be there, you know, something, that kind of stuff. That kind of stuff, it's really common here. Like, you can't be good if you're a woman. You have to lay with somebody to be in the place you are. That's really common misogynist things that they say here. And I noticed that every week, some guy that want to be in the industry want to talk with me, you know, to know what we need as patients, how many patients you think you are, how many patients will buy my medicine or whatever. And I hate that because they are all men. Yeah. There's no woman. And it's like, you women are good to take care, but not to lead, you know? So thank you. And now you move, and now the guys are coming here and we will make it happen. And the attitude was really bad. Yes. And you don't know nothing because you're a woman. So that was one of the things that make me think that I want to have a brand too, that I want to have my own, was one of the things. The other things is that I need money to do the things that I do with Cannabis Gotas Esperanza, that we have a lot, we want to travel to go to all the country, not only in Lima. We want to teach the people to make home growth safe, not do what, you know, in, have to be good. If you do home growth, you have to be good with not chemicals and whatever. So that kind of stuff. To go with doctors to other states, departments of Peru. Peru have 24 departments. Lima is the capital. So we do a lot of work with Cannabis Gotas Esperanza teaching and whatever. And I need money to do that. So I will have this brand that is named Hope. Hope por Fran Brivio, that will, I hope, make the money to afford Cannabis Gotas Esperanza, so I won't depend if a lab or whatever give money to work. For example, I want to taste the medicine that patients do, so I have to buy a chromatography machine and so they can take the medicine and see if it's right, it's correct the way they are doing their own medicine. And so I have that. And I'm a patient, so I'm always thinking what we need. And that's how I do kind of hope with Max, with Dr. Alzamora, because I was saying we need a place safe for patients that you can go and there's doctors that can listen to you, because as I told you, I think that they dehumanize. And I would love to go as a patient to a doctor that really listened to me. And I think that I always observe that in this industry is like, it's a square and they want to make cannabis fit in that square. That is the medicine, the way medicine is now. And I want the opposite. You know, I want to cannabis teach how to relax, to listen again, to not synthetic, that you have to, not the plant is the medicine, or the whole plant is the medicine, not only CBD. I hate when people just work with CBD, because it's not true that it's the medicine. THC is medicine as well. So for me, it's important. Of course, there will be patients that will need full spectrum CBD. I know But I'm not saying against that or whatever. I'm saying that it's not only that.
Yeah, and it's very reductionist, isn't it? I mean, our kind of pharmaceutical model is in its essence reductionist because it's, you know, reduced everything to one or two molecules. And, you know, not necessarily, you know, how it's measured is not necessarily like improvements in quality of life. I mean, they, you know, sometimes it's kind of considered, but it's not the main focus. So yeah, I think there is a lot to be, you know, cannabis can teach, you know, the establishment and the established ways of doing things, which let's not forget, this is recent, right? The kind of the model that we live in now that is fairly recent, you know. It's,
yeah,
we assume that if it's because it's in our lifetime or you know, for the last 70 years, it must be the best and the only way, but actually not. I don't think it's necessarily the case. I'm wondering, you know, you'd spoke about at the beginning of this, you know, getting healing, I guess emotional, maybe spiritual healing from your experiences with ayahuasca and peyote. I'm wondering, have you had any insights or healing like that with cannabis?
If I think that cannabis helped me to heal in the healing process.
Yeah, but healing is in terms of emotion.
Yeah, emotion. But, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes, of course. I think cannabis, I always say that cannabis is my drug for choice. Hope is my drug for choice, and cannabis is my medicine. And I really think that cannabis helped me day by day to be in the moment, to relax, to feel what I feel, to be present, to be more calm about it. Everything in life, because my disease get worse if I get really mad, you know, and emotions go crazy. It's really bad for my disease. So living in a life that I can be more calm and in touch with my emotions, but not overwhelmed by emotions, you know. I can feel, as I told you, when I'm sad, it's not like I'm like this plain. No, I get mad, I get sad, but doesn't overwhelm me, you know. It's helped me to live a healthy and happy life in many sense.
I mean, just to turn it on its head slightly, what do you think your life would be like now if you hadn't discovered cannabis and using it therapeutically?
I don't know. I was broken. I think it was broken before I get sick. And maybe we are all a little bit broken, but cannabis, oh, my disease start this journey, this path changing. And cannabis give me the opportunity to be the person I always think I was. I don't know, when I was a teenager, I was activist, you know, of many fights, many things that moved me. And I was really sensitive. And that sensitive, you don't have tools, could be really bad. But I think cannabis and all these sacred plants give me the opportunity to look at me, laugh at me, and one makes things better for me, for to start, and then for the others. Yeah.
Well, I think that's a great place to end our chat today. And I feel very inspired. I'm glad we've had this conversation because, you know, we just had such a brief chat, you know, a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
And it's been really lovely and, you know, a wonderful example of showing what is possible if you stand up and you know, you are count, you know, you let yourself be counted and you say, yes, I, you know, this is me and I use cannabis medicinally and this is how it's changed my life.
I want just to say that I'm happy because I will start a juicio. I with the health minister.
Oh, you've got a court case. You're with the health minister. Okay,
yes.
Tell us about that.
Yes, it's really nice for me because it's the first case that they accept that I ask the minister, the health minister, I want to do the home growth, and they say no. Ten months before that, they say no. So I went to a judge and asked that I want to demand?
Mm-hmm.
No.
Yep.
To the health minister, al ministerio,
the Ministry of Health.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
And they accepted. So we start this fight now. And it's really nice. And we made a bill that I hope that will complete everything. There are congresswomen and congressmen, they accept our bill, and we are finding that, yes. And I am glad that now I have the strength, yes, to do all these things. Because as I told you, I don't want to be a privilege. I want to be that this privilege I have are for everyone, you know, are laws. Not privilege, our loss. Yeah, thank you. Sorry, it's good news. It's a big issue for me. Yeah, because it would be help for a lot of people if it works, and I think it will. Yeah.
Well, you have to keep us posted. We'll keep all our fingers crossed for you, and the court case. Okay, thanks, Francesca.
Thank you, Mary. Really, really nice to talk to you. And sorry, my English is that bad, but I will practice more now.
It's been brilliant. That's all my Spanish.
Thank you for listening to Cannabis Voices. If you like this podcast, please subscribe, rate, review, and share with your family and friends.